Welcome to Out of the Question, a podcast that looks behind some common questions and uncovers the question behind the question while providing real solutions for biblical world and life view. Your host is Andrea Schwartz, a teacher and mentor and founder of the Chalcedon Teacher Training Institute.
Prejudice, bias, and preference are all subjective words. We'd like to think that we all come to conclusions objectively, but that is rarely the case. There is no subject or issue that is truly neutral, or neutral at all for that matter. It will always refer to some standard, whether outside of man or determined by man. Once when I was called for jury duty in a civil case, while being questioned, I revealed that the matter before the court was similar to a current suit that my husband was involved with. Even though I felt I could be objective, the plaintiff's attorney was eager for me to be dismissed. The subject of abuse is a volatile one, and most have some opinion on the subject. If you or someone you know has been on the receiving end, most likely your perspective is colored by the experience. It would be difficult for it not to be. Most domestic abuse cases today involve women, but there are cases, often underreported, that involve men. For a long time, I have wanted to delve into this subject on the podcast, but I wanted to talk with someone whose experience included both sides of the issue. In the process, I came across Sally Owen. Sally describes herself as someone severely abused as a child and a victim of domestic violence again as an adult. At one point, she lived in a domestic violence shelter and subsequently took victims of domestic violence into her own home. One might say that Sally's bias would be on the side of women. However, I had the opportunity to read her short book entitled Men, Guilty Until Proven Innocent. I felt her perspective is noteworthy and timely as well. Sally is degreed in social work and has worked in that field. But as a result of that, she saw the need to remedy an out-of-control legal system that is far from being just. She then became a licensed attorney in order to take its stab at correcting a very flawed system. Thanks for joining me today, Sally.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I would say the major theme of your book and the work you have done centers around justice. Not justice for some, but justice for all.
Correct.
Give a bit of background, if you will, as how you came to the conclusion that men are often permanent victims of the court system.
Well, having been a victim of domestic violence and having been in domestic violence court in Pennsylvania, I managed to sit through a number of cases where men were being accused of domestic violence, and in listening to the case being presented to the judge and the resulting opinion of the judge, I couldn't believe it. How could anyone call this justice when a woman was going to court, making her accusations with no proof, no evidence, nothing but her word, and this man being labeled for life as an abuser? It didn't make sense to me.
That's interesting, because I started off talking about bias. You weren't of the ilk that women never lie.
No.
Well, as women, we both know we've encountered situations where women lie. How did we get to a point where the justice system, the family court system, because I think this is the jurisdiction it falls under, a civil matter, got to the point where whatever a woman said was sufficient?
Well, in Pennsylvania and in many states, the judges are elected. That is where I have seen the problem in civil court, in domestic violence court. I have talked to judges who were friends of mine, and I have asked them, how could you rule in favor of the woman when it was almost obvious that she was lying? And they said, well, if I ruled in his favor and I didn't issue the protection order, and then he went back and killed her, that would be the end of my career as a judge, because I didn't give her that protection order. And he went back and killed her or seriously hurt her. Okay, so this is about your career, not about justice.
Okay, talk a little bit about the whole, because a major thrust of your book is about the protective order and how very often when this is presented as an option or will you take this, that people take it without realizing that it will be a lifelong stigma.
Yes, a protection from abuse order in Pennsylvania, they call it a PFA, is issued, the man agrees to stay away from the woman, not go to the house, not have any contact with her. Now, I have to, as a side note, say, it doesn't say she can't contact him or harass him. It just says he has to have no contact with her. And he's upset. He says, no, I don't want any contact with her. Yes, I'll sign this. I agree to stay away from her, leave her alone, and have no contact with her. Not realizing that once that protection order is issued, he can no longer own a weapon. He can no longer work in healthcare. He can't work with kids. He can't work with the elderly. He is labeled for life as being an abuser when he thinks all he is doing is agreeing to leave her alone and stay away from her.
Now, the interesting part of what I read in your book, this isn't just about spouses. This can be a boyfriend and a girlfriend who either live together or frequently connect with each other intimately. And if she's a woman scorned, if he decides he doesn't want to get married, or he decides that he doesn't want her to live there anymore or have a key to his house, that the same procedure can take place.
Yes, and it does not apply equally to men and women.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I sat through one PFA hearing where the man still had stitches in his head, where his wife had attacked him with a cast iron skillet and split his head open. He had a skull fracture and 8 stitches in his forehead. And he wanted to have a protection order against her. And the judge looked at him and said, look at you. You're what, 6'6"? He said, yes, ma'am. And you weigh about 250 pounds? Yes. And she's about 5'4", and you're telling me you couldn't protect yourself from her? And wow. He said, Your Honor, if I had, I would be in jail. I would be charged with domestic violence for trying to protect myself. And she's, well, this is ridiculous. I'm not giving you a protection order.
So this protection order, is it good for a certain amount of time usually?
Usually it's for a year.
And then what happens?
Well, then she has to either renew it or it expires. But he still cannot own a weapon. He still cannot work in healthcare or work with the elderly or with children because he's got a record of a protection order.
One of the things you bring up is that in these kinds of hearings or civil proceedings, you're not guaranteed. Like if you don't have the money to have an attorney, one will be provided for you. That's not the rule in civil cases, is it?
Correct. You are not entitled to a jury trial. You are not entitled to an attorney, except I have to add, recently, within the last couple of years, the state of Nevada had a ruling that in domestic violence trials, the man does have a right to a jury trial if he wants.
I see. So in a lot of other places, that's not the case. It's solely at the discretion of the judge.
Correct. And it's not even discretion of the judge. They do not have a right to a jury trial or to an attorney.
So in terms of evidence, like, and that's one of the things that I'd never really thought of before, in a criminal case, which your thesis is These should all be criminal cases, in which case evidence and testimony, etc., can apply, including laws of perjury. But that's not the case. If it's later discovered that the woman had lied whole cloth, does she have any consequences?
No.
Well, that was a quick no.
I know of one case where the woman wanted her teenage daughter to testify on her behalf, and the teenage daughter said to the judge, "No, I am not going to testify for my mother. She's lying. What she is telling me to say is lies, and I will not lie for my mother." And the judge still issued the order.
In order to get my head around this, is the protection order the final thing? In other words, that's the verdict. You must stay away, and this is permanently on your record, or is that what precedes going to a trial?
In most cases, that is the final consequence. Now, if it is a case where there was serious bodily injury, the woman was in the hospital, he stabbed her, he shot her, something like that, then it goes on to trial.
Would the civil proceeding require him to continually support her, even though he's got this protection order?
If there is a support order, which would be different than the PFA, a lot of attorneys, well, I won't say a lot, some attorneys I have actually heard tell their clients, their female clients, "You need to go get a PFA because that will help you in custody court and in support court, because you will have a better chance of getting the kids and getting more support if you have a protection order against him before you file for divorce." And I have heard women say, "Well, he has never threatened me. He has never hit me." Well, he doesn't have to. You just have to say he did.
Now, I can imagine some people listening, especially because I've known people on both sides of this issue. That's why I was reluctant to ever just talk to one person. What made you unique, Sally, was that you had been on the receiving end of abuse, but you found the injustice towards men in general something that didn't sit right with you. So explain a little bit about why and how a criminal trial, a criminal proceeding would be different, and how justice would better, not always perfectly, but better be served.
Here's an example. If a man gets into an argument with the lady that lives next door to him, and she starts screaming at him and he slaps her across the face, she can call the police and say, "My next door neighbor hit me." They file criminal charges. That's usually a summary offense or a misdemeanor. They go before the district justice or, you know, whatever. And she has witnesses. She's got a red mark on her face where he hit her. And they go to court. He's got a right to an attorney. She says, "He hit me," and he is found guilty and has to pay a fine or whatever. And it's over with. Or if he gets in a fight with his next door neighbor, the man comes out and he's hollering because he parked in front of the driveway or something. They get in a fight and he beats him up. He puts him in the hospital. He's charged with assault. And they go to court and he has a right to an attorney. The other guy has to show proof. He has to show evidence. He has to have witnesses, whatever, to prove beyond a reasonable doubt in criminal court that this actually happened. And then he is charged with the crime. He's either found guilty or not guilty. And he pays the consequences for his actions. With protection from abuse court, there is no proof. There is no evidence. There is no witnesses. It's if the judge believes the woman, and it's strictly on her say-so, she says, "Well, he hit me, and he told me if I leave, he'd kill me before he'd let me be with anyone else, and I'm afraid of him, and I need a protection order," and the judge gives her the order. It's on her word, "He hit me," and or her word that he threatened me, and that protection order is given.
So if this was committed to criminal court, we would bypass these stages, but then each party would be held to swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes. In domestic violence court, the woman is sworn to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. But there is no penalty for not telling the truth. It's still perjury, but they're never prosecuted for it.
I see. Do men ever get protective orders against women?
Yes, but it is extremely rare.
So I've heard people going through divorce and custody, going to family court, talking about how difficult it is, because oftentimes the lawyers that they get seem to be more in line with the system than protecting their interests. That the wife might have an attorney, the husband will have an attorney, and if they're children, the children get their own attorney. Is this a system that just perpetuates itself in family court as well as domestic violence court?
Yes, but they're usually kept pretty much separate. Once the woman has the protection order, then that can be entered into evidence in family court. You know, she has a protection order against him, so we're asking that any visitation with the children be done at the police station or at family services, that she wants no contact with him. So this all has to be done through a third party. Sometimes the man can still have unsupervised visitation with the kids, depending on the situation. But even then, she has to have a friend or a relative take the kids to him, or he has to have a friend or a relative pick the kids up. They don't have any communication involving the kids. Most of the time, he is kicked out of the residence if they're married, because she gets to keep the house and keep the kids, where if they had just split up without it going to domestic violence court, then whoever left would be the one that left. For example, if they're married and she wants a divorce, and he says, well, if you want to leave, leave. I'm not leaving. I have known of cases where she has said, oh, yes, you are. And she went down, got the protection order, and he had to leave. Even though there was no violence involved, that was her way of getting to keep the house.
Have there ever been or currently measures to try to rectify this imbalance?
Not that I'm aware of.
And again, do you think that goes back to elected judges want to get elected again? Their future career depends on not having things that go against the cultural norm?
That is a big part of it. But there's also a public opinion, like I believe it's a federal Violence Against Women Act, where the federal government decided that they needed laws to protect women from violence, that I think it should be Violence Against People Act. It should be an act to protect people from violence, not necessarily women, not necessarily children, not necessarily men, but violence against people. I mean, women have been screaming for equal rights for how long now, which I'm 100% in favor of equal rights and equal responsibility. If women want equal rights, we should all have to sign up for the draft. We want equal pay. We should do equal work. There's just so many things. I was a certified welder. I hold my part in life. I am definitely in favor of equal rights and equal responsibility. I mentioned I was a victim of domestic violence. I was inpatient in the hospital 3 times in 1 year from domestic violence. I'm not talking about an occasional slap across the face. I'm talking about inpatient in the hospital. So I am very familiar with domestic violence. And I am very much against domestic violence. I think that anyone who is being violent and attacking someone and causing physical harm should be arrested and go to court for it. Not as domestic violence, but as assault and battery and breaking the law. Not the law for violence against women, but the law against violence.
Have you been accused by people that you're a turncoat? After all, you experienced domestic violence. Why are you apparently siding with the other side?
I am siding with justice, not the other side. I do not think that men should be beating up on women. I do not think women should be beating up on men. I just think that everyone should be held to the same standards and the same laws. And it should not matter if a man beat up his partner or beat up the guy next door or the clerk in the grocery store. If they're committing violent acts, they should be held to the same standard, no matter who the acts are against.
And that would be justice.
That would be justice. Equal rights, equal responsibility, equal penalties for equal crimes.
You know, I was trying to think of an analogy. First of all, society is so polarized that even the term domestic violence, sexual abuse, it loses its meaning if it's applied to almost anything and everything. But it also implies with this protective order ramification that people can't change. So even if a person was violent at age 20, through many things, maturity, conversion, lots of different things, that person could change. But it would be like somebody was a reckless driver when he was 20, and so his license was revoked forever, that he never could drive again. Reckless driving can produce injury. Reckless driving can produce death. But this whole idea places our lives, you might say, in the hands of either elected or appointed officials with not necessarily a standard that exists outside of them. Would you agree to that, that that's really what we're looking at?
Yes, definitely. And not just the fact that they can change and they can grow up or they can get counseling and that they could become responsible law-abiding citizens. They may have been responsible law-abiding citizens all along and just had someone telling lies about them.
I teach and study biblical law. The penalty for perjury in scripture is if I say you murdered John and it turned out you didn't murder John and I knew you didn't murder John, whatever penalty you would receive then would come to me. That's how seriously perjury was taken in a judicial system, because if perjury is allowed and it's not checked, then you really don't have justice.
Right.
One of the takeaways I got, because in your short book, you cite different examples, and a lot of them are personal experiences, whether you were helping someone or you witnessed something. It would seem to me that the current state of justice in domestic violence court should give everybody pause in terms of getting involved in relationships that could then bind them. And I don't mean people shouldn't get married. I mean that live-in girlfriends, live-in boyfriends, if there's no commitment, if there's nothing at stake, then it may seem like we're free and we can go do what we want, but she's got this power that most men probably don't realize.
Exactly. I agree with that 100%. Any type of relationship, you're leaving yourself open for that. And she might seem like the nicest person in the world as long as things are going her way. But then you decide you want out of the relationship, or she wants out and you don't, or whatever. All she has to do is say, well, I'm afraid of him. He threatened me. He hit me and said that if I ever left him, he'd kill me. And you get the protective order. I cite one case there where the man was a police officer. Another time, the man was in the service. Well, once that protection order is issued, they can no longer own a weapon. There goes their whole career.
So it would seem, again, that if you do things properly and in order the way the Bible, for example, prescribes it, then before you marry, you want to find out about this person, you want to find out about the person's family, the casual hookup almost is potentially inevitable that will end up poorly. And it seems almost like there's this place where women can go to learn how to do this. How do they learn about the PFAs? How do they learn the things to say? Are these in novels? Are they in movies? Where do they come from?
A lot of it is coming from family law attorneys, which makes me sick because an attorney is supposed to represent justice and represent the law, and they take an oath to do that. But then behind the scenes, they're pushing these women to lie and to go and do this. And that in itself makes me sick to know that there are actually attorneys pushing this. And then there's women's groups, any of the women's rights activists, any place where women are going for these equal rights seminars, these places where women supporting women, there's almost always the people pushing the domestic violence scenario where, well, you do know if he threatened you or if he hit you, well, no, he didn't. Well, you know, if you go to domestic violence court, they take your word for it, whether he did or not.
You cite one case where the man and woman were not married. He owned the house. She got a protective order. He wasn't allowed to go back to his own house, and she was able to move somebody else in.
Yes, that is very common. And then, of course, if he owns the house, he can sell the house, or if he was renting, he can get his name off the lease. But in the meantime, she's got complete control of the house and the occupants and everything else until he can take the legal actions necessary to get the house sold or out of his name.
Like I said, I've known people on both sides of this issue, and I can almost hear people saying that what you're describing, Sally, is a minority of cases, that people actually do hurt other people. People actually are abusive. Isn't that more so than the court of public opinion, than the court of justice?
Yes, and I do agree that a lot of people, male and female, are being abused, are being victimized, and are scared to leave a relationship because of threats and violence. However, that needs to be taken care of in criminal court. If someone is committing a crime against another person, either physical violence or threats of violence, that needs to go to criminal court and be addressed.
It's almost as if, with these different levels of justice, how can something be wrong in one case, but not wrong in another case? I know people who say we shouldn't even have civil courts. If you're dealing with something, it should be based on standards of right and wrong, not legal maneuverings and things like that.
I agree. All court issues should be based on right and wrong, evidence, witnesses, truth and lies. Justice is justice for all, not justice for some. And another thing that gets me about domestic violence court, why should it be less of a crime for a man to punch his wife in the face than it is to punch the guy next door in the face? They're diminishing the woman's value, saying it's less of a crime. That doesn't go to criminal court. That goes to domestic violence court. Why is that any less of a crime than punching the man next door? If he punched her, and there's evidence, witness, whatever, then he should go to court. He should be charged with a crime. Not told, oh, if you agree to stay away from her, then we won't press charges. Well, no, that isn't how it works. If he did it, he should be charged.
People might say, well, you don't understand. Women are very scared. They are concerned that they'll get hurt. And it's almost as if they're thoroughly defenseless as opposed to, I can just leave. But you don't understand, I couldn't leave because he would do X. Doesn't that just perpetuate this whole idea that we need this domestic violence court so that we can deal with this very specialized situation, as opposed to what you were saying, either something is right or something is wrong?
Well, to say that the women are so defenseless and can't leave, and isn't that turning around the whole women's rights idea that women are equal, that women can defend themselves? Women, if they want to be defenseless, they can. I can play defenseless if I need to. I think any woman can. That's part of our makeup. But men shouldn't have to pay the price for that. If a woman is defenseless and he's hurting her, well, then he should be charged with the crime of hurting her. If she's afraid of him, there are restraining orders that have nothing to do with domestic violence. Well, they do, but they're separate, and you have to have evidence and a reason for getting a restraining order. Why should a protection from abuse order be any different than any other restraining order? If I'm stalking the guy next door and following him around and threatening him and everything, he can go to court and get a restraining order and charge me with a crime. He doesn't need a protection from abuse order. He doesn't need a domestic violence order. So why should two people in the same house need that? She can get a restraining order. She can charge him with a crime. A domestic violence court is a farce. It's a scam. It should never have been started in the first place.
Well, that's why I asked you if the system there was rigged, because obviously there's a bureaucracy that's attached to it. There are judges, there are attorneys, and you say, or at least allege, that in a lot of cases, it's the attorneys that the women go see who encourage the lying, and yet it seems that this injustice goes unpunished on all levels.
Right.
Let's say, and I don't even know if you have a good answer to this, somebody listening realizes they fall into one of these categories. Is there any way to get their reputation back, to get their ability to work back that you know of?
I am not sure about that. Not that I know of, but I know that people have gone to the governor of their state and had previous convictions commuted or overturned so that they could get their life together if they had gone certain amount of time without committing a crime and so forth, that they could get previous convictions pardoned. So I don't know of that happening with domestic violence orders, but I would think it would be possible. Not very probable, but possible.
When exactly did this all transpire? You know, we can look at a lot of things, the war on poverty, the war on drugs. We can look at a time when those things started. When did this system where you didn't have to provide evidence, you couldn't, if you were the person who was being accused, even bring witnesses because that wasn't part of it. When did this start?
I really couldn't tell you. I became aware of it in the 80s when people were telling me to go get a protection order. And I said, well, he had that house when I married him. I'm not going to have him removed from his house. We can work these things out on our own. Oh, no, no, you need to go get a protection order. You need to do this. You need to do that. And then I started checking to find out what was required, I couldn't believe. And then I started talking to people who had protective orders against their ex-husbands or ex-boyfriends. And then I started talking to these ex-husbands and ex-boyfriends, and I started to realize what a mess it was. And then I saw a lot of cases where the woman would say, well, no, I want him to come back. You know, we work things out, everything's fine. I want to drop the protection order. And they wouldn't allow them to drop the order.
Wow.
And they'd say, well, I want him to come back. Well, if he comes back and the police see him going in or out of your house, he'll be arrested, even if he's there with her permission. And I mean, it just turned into a nightmare for some of these people. It was unbelievable.
Does the court ever provide, in your knowledge, counselors to see if there can be reconciliation?
No. They discourage reconciliation. And even when the people go on their own for counseling and do get back together, they have to have an attorney go and have the protection order rescinded, but then it's still on his record for life. And there have been cases where the couple got back together, everything's fine. 10 years down the road, he wants to go buy a new rifle for hunting and he can't buy a gun because that protection order is on his record.
This is more of a philosophical question, and then we'll kind of wrap up our discussion. Do you think the existence of this abysmal system is a result of the degradation societally of morals and commitment and values that people a century ago, they may not always be happy in a marriage, but they stayed married? That we've gotten to a point where it's all about feelings and all about how I feel and my self-esteem. Do you think that this is evidence of that kind of degradation societally?
Definitely. Definitely. I know, like I said, my late husband, he was violent when he was drinking. When he quit drinking, we got back together. I took care of him. He died in my arms. He was a wonderful, sweet, caring husband who had a drinking problem, and he was violent when he was drinking. I ended up leaving, getting a divorce, and then he quit drinking because he was sick, and we got back together again. I mean, I loved him. He was my husband, and I've just got old-fashioned values. He was my husband for life, and I couldn't take the abuse when he was drinking. I think a lot of times these problems that people are jumping into the courts or jumping into attorney's offices are problems that with counseling, with church, with the help of the Lord, they could work out, they could solve the problem, whether it's violence or anything else, there's something causing it, whether it's mental health issues on his part, whether it's drinking, whether it's drugs, instead of people trying to help each other or help themselves, they're just jumping into this easy system to get out of it, to get what they can out of it. And it's just all about me, me, me. And it's a crazy world.
But I think also, as the family has been stripped of authority, I remember situations where on a Saturday, us kids were told to go outside because an aunt and uncle came over, and my father and mother and my grandparents, they were having this big powwow. I didn't know what it was about. I later found out that it was family counseling to keep the couple together. So when we decided that the family can't handle these things, I think that this is one of the ramifications, because the state has no interest really in seeing that the institution of marriage and the family is preserved. They have more authority when it's not.
Exactly. Yes. They want to take over every aspect of our lives, whether it's marriage or raising our children. Oh, don't get me going on that one. The government is trying to take over too much and tell people what to do, how to live, what they're allowed to do or not allowed to do. Like telling people, once you have that protection order, you are not allowed to get back together. You're not allowed to try to work things out. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, it's wicked, really. We will call it ridiculous because it seems so bizarre, but it's wicked, I think.
Yes, I agree.
All right. One last question. If people are either approaching this situation, they know of someone, do you think that it's helpful to try to get people to reconcile with each other and then have them go through the process? Because I don't think this works with just boyfriend and girlfriend, because there's no commitment there.
Right.
If there's a commitment, then you want to restore the commitment. As an aside, I sort of laugh when people are not married, living together, and then the girl is very upset because he cheated on her. What did he cheat on? You didn't have a commitment. You didn't have a covenant. So when we get rid of those societal things, it's very hard to fix things because oftentimes they're not grounded in anything genuine or right.
And I think you hit the key word there, that marriage is not just a commitment. It is a covenant.
Well, Sally, I ran into you sort of accidentally as I was having a conversation with someone else. I'm glad I got to know you and to read your book. Is there any other advice or suggested reading material that you think might be helpful to my listeners?
Yes, it's a very easy to find book that you can get almost anywhere. They even have them in the drawers in hotel rooms. It's called The Bible.
Well, I don't know that I could say that better myself. All right, listeners, if you have any questions or comments, you know how to get a hold of me, outofthequestionpodcast@gmail.com. Sally, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Out of the Question. For more information on this and other topics, please visit calcedon.edu.